I think Wichita is a good launching pad. The barrier to entry is so low. So for entrepreneurs, there's so much that you can do.
Welcome back to another episode of the Wichita Life Podcast. My name's Landon. Today's guest is Derek Sorrells, aka the Willy Wonka of Wichita. Derek is the founder of Scion Capital Partners and has opened many of Wichita's favorite and fun places like Papa's, The Arcade, Just a Sip, Sweet and Saucy, Let's Go Build, and his most recent business, Flight 1868, which is a whiskey bar. We talked about his whole unconventional entrepreneurial journey, and this chat is full of gems and lessons. Enjoy my conversation with Derek Sorrells.
All right, I'm here with Derek Sorrells. How you doing, Derek?
I'm excellent. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm glad we could finally get this set up. I think the first time we met, you came to our first Wichita Life party, but you had lost your voice. So we couldn't really talk much.
Yeah, I had been talking too much, which people who know me will see that happens quite often. But yeah, I lost my voice and I couldn't talk.
Well, here we are. So we can have a nice long talk. So,
absolutely.
Just tell us a little bit about yourself. For people that don't know who you are, what are you up to? Who are you?
Pretty much a lifelong Wichitan. Been here since I was 7 years old, so I used to consider myself trapped here by my parents. But went to local schools, Hadley and North High School.
North, okay.
And so always wanted more than I had growing up. You know, I always joke that I didn't come from a lower middle class family. I came from an upper lower class family. I was always wanted to be upwardly bound. And so if I wanted anything, I had to earn it myself and start working full time at 16 after school and on weekends, and got the entrepreneurial bug and started opening businesses, some which were very successful, some not so. And have now 6 businesses, almost 7, which I'll be opening another one relatively soon. And just wanting to bring as much greatness to Wichita that I can.
Awesome. Very cool. So 2 quick things. First thing that stands out is you said Wichita North. And again, this is probably podcast number, 83, 84 or something like that. I've had a disproportionate amount of people from Wichita North. So what is it about Wichita North that makes people go on to do kind of exceptional things? Or is there anything that stands out to you?
You know, it is funny because I have friends that are successful that that owned liquor stores and other businesses that also went to North. And I don't know, it was a very, even when I graduated, which was in 88, it was a very diverse school. It was, there was a large number of Southeast Asians, large number of Hispanic. Mm-hmm. The amount of white was only about 20%. So it wasn't over proportionally one particular race. And while there was some tension, as there is in any high school,
sure,
everybody got along. And I think that we saw that, you know, people can get along and you have the ability. We had some really great teachers. You have the ability to do a lot of different things.
Sure.
And, most of us wanted more than what we had. So we started looking at, okay, how do we do that? And I think some of those teachers that we had really helped push us to make us better. And some of them I even stay in contact with today.
Very interesting. I don't know if I've ever formulated the question quite like that before. So that was a great answer, because I've mentioned that before and they're just like, oh, it's just interesting. Like North High was awesome, but that was a great answer. It's super interesting because some of the people are entrepreneurs like yourself, professional athletes. Like, it's pretty interesting that kind of the diverse, like you mentioned, diverse types of people, but all kinds of successes have come out of North, which is really cool. Looking back, so we talked about 6 businesses and we'll dive into kind of a lot of those. Growing up, was there anything specific that would make you think you would own 6, 7, however many businesses today? Is there anything? I know people in the past have said, like, I don't know, sold baseball cards or lemonade stands, stuff like that. Is there anything specific that stands out from your childhood?
Oh, I definitely did the lemonade stand, but it was a twist. My mother didn't buy lemonade. She bought frozen concentrated limeades.
Mm.
So it's the, you rip open the can and you shake the can and the blob of frozen stuff falls out. So I did that. Also sold magazines. You could sell magazines door to door and things like that for prizes.
Sure.
And I did those kind of things. But it really became when, as I started to get older and I realized that, you know, if I wanted more than just what the minimum wage was at the time, which was $3.35 an hour, definitely showing my age here, or even just a little bit more, I was going to have to do something else to get that. So I started figuring out what I could do, and I started, I was a wedding photographer for a while. I quit counting when I got to 500 weddings. So I think I stopped around 750. And that was back in the day of film.
That's
so,
wild.
Yeah. So it was, but it was something I could do on the weekends because it was always Saturdays.
Right.
And I could have my full-time job during the week, and it would, you know, a little bit extra money.
Sure.
And that's how I got into, really catching that entrepreneurial bug, because then it was all about me.
Yeah.
I decided how much work, I decided how much I was going to charge. I had to sell the product, which at that time was me and my work. And that's really what got me into, really into entrepreneurship.
Wow, that's very cool. What age did you start doing the weddings?
I was 19.
Okay.
I worked at a one-hour photo lab in Town West Mall. May God rest Town West Mall's soul as it slowly dies. But I was 19, and I worked at a one-hour photo lab, and a girl next door came over and said, I'm getting married. Do you take wedding photos?
Yeah.
And I said, absolutely. Had no idea what
sure.
I was doing.
Yeah. Figured out later, yeah.
And there's no Google. There's back then, there's nothing to look up. So you kind of had to figure out, okay, what do you normally photograph at a wedding?
Well, and it's not like today. It'd be like, just go look at Instagram at any wedding photographer, and you could say, okay, when they're coming down the aisle, the cake, whatever, the specific shots. But yeah, that's, you were kind of going in the dark.
Yeah, and it was very different. The quality of the images, because you were on film, was very different as well. So luckily, because I worked at the photo lab, I had a good understanding of film and exposures and all those kind of things. And I was on the staff of the yearbook and the newspaper at mm-hmm. school. So I did have some idea what I was doing. But first wedding was in a backyard in Hayesville. And it was the first time the Chiefs had played on Monday Night Football in like 15 years. And they literally, at the reception in the backyard, it was on Monday night. They had the Chiefs on.
That's awesome.
So I mean, they've come a long way from then to winning two Super Bowls.
Yeah, no kidding. While you were working at the one-hour video or photo, I listened to a different podcast, and you used to transfer from like 8mm or what, some of that kind of stuff to VHS. Talk a little bit about that story.
I did. So, back in the day before VHS and DVDs, there were these little round movie reels, and you could shoot 3.5 minutes of film, 8mm size film. You could shoot 3.5 minutes of that, and that's what people did to shoot videos, because there wasn't a way to shoot video before. And most people's parents at the time, or their grandparents, had these, and they were all in a box. You had to pull out a projector and pull down a screen and put these reels on, and then they would only last 3.5 minutes. And it was really kind of a pain to watch. And many people would have 50, 75, 100 of them. And so what I did was at this store I worked at, I would put them on videotape at the time, VHS videotape. That way people could watch them. And it was super popular to do, because then they could make multiple copies, and then all the family members could have copies. Well, I decided, I knew what the equipment was, and I decided, what if I could do this for other one-hour photo labs, even around the state, and some other ones locally? And that's what I started doing. And I started doing it out of an extra bedroom in my house. And, of course, you can imagine, super popular around Thanksgiving and Christmas, because it was a great Christmas gift, or great to watch at Thanksgiving. It was tremendous, and made a lot of money doing it. Wound up selling that little business to one of the one-hour photo labs I was doing the work for.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of really got me the entrepreneurial bug going again.
Wow. And so this is like, what, late teens, early 20s?
I was 21 when I started doing it.
Okay. Very cool. So then you sell that. So then what's next? So you're like, hey, I want to go get a job. I want to keep being an entrepreneur.
Well, I was at Wichita State, which I did drop out of. I didn't wind up going back and getting my bachelor's till I was 36. So that's a whole different story.
Sure.
But I kind of just got a job. I got a job. I wasn't sure what to do. And I got a job at a cell phone store. That's what we used to call them, cell phones, back in the day. And I worked there for a while. And I was in service department. So we used to do installed phones in cars. And I would, you know, rip up the carpet and put the phone in and hide the wires and all that. And after a while, I decided, I was seeing how much money the salespeople were making. I was just paying hourly, but they were making commission.
Right, right.
And some of them were making $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month.
Wow.
Selling cell phones, yeah. Because you couldn't just buy them everywhere. Best Buy didn't sell them. Mm-hmm. Are very, very limited supplies. So I decided to see if I could become an agent and open my own cell phone store. So I became an agent of Southwestern Bell Wireless,
okay,
which is before AT&T purchased them, and had my own little cell phone store on the west side of town. I am a West Sider. It's Central and West Street. And I had that store for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sold it to one of my competitors.
Hmm. So how do you view selling? When do you, what makes you decide to sell it versus continuing to operate it or just own it? What goes into that decision for you?
Well, at that point, I hadn't recognized that there are two kinds of people in business. There's owners and there's operators.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always been an operator. In other words, you're there every day.
Right.
You're running everything. You're interacting with customers and things like that. And that always sounds good because nobody is going to love your customer as much as you.
Right.
It just doesn't matter. But the problem is you can't scale. You also have the potential to burn out.
Sure.
So I was running this store. I was 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. My wife at the time wanted to spend more time with me, and you know, Saturdays weren't available. She was a high school teacher, grade school teacher, rather, here in Wichita. And so I just decided to get out. And part of it was, too, is when we got into that business, every phone we would sell, we would get a commission from the carrier of $400.
Mm-hmm.
It was down in 2.5 years to $50.
Wow. Okay.
So the financial side of it had significantly changed.
Sure.
So I jokingly was having I was having breakfast with one of my competitors one morning, and he was on the east side of town.
Mm-hmm.
And I jokingly said, "Well, we were talking about co-marketing," and I said, "Yeah, you should just buy me out." And he said, "How much?" And so I sold him the store.
Yeah. So to that point, kind of the negotiation for that, and it was a while ago, but I guess what do you throw out a big number then, or do you throw out a realistic number if he asks how much? Like what goes through your head when that kind of thing? Because I think there's two aspects. It's like, okay, do I throw out like a dream number, or I guess if you really do want to get out, you just throw out a more realistic number.
He offered a number, and I went up. I asked for a little more.
Yeah.
I should have asked for more. You know, numbers are always a negotiation.
Right.
So everything's a negotiation. So you never go in with, you know, what you're willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Always go in lower than that, pretty much no matter what it is. And so, yeah, it wasn't a lot. It wasn't significant.
Sure.
And, you know, from there, I opened my next cell phone store relatively quickly. Mm. And I failed gloriously.
What was the differentiator in that business? If you sold the other one for multiple deliveries, why did you open a new one?
So, you know, one of the reasons that you know, back in the day, as we say, when I had my first cell phone business, a cell phone plan, for example, the cell phone plan we were selling was $25 a month. It included 80 minutes a month. 80. That's all.
Yeah.
And they ran a promotion, and then they did triple talk time. So you got 80 minutes times three. So you got 240 minutes every sure. month for $25.
Yeah.
People were losing their mind. And then this company called Cricket came to town, or they were getting ready to come to town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was $35 a month, unlimited.
Wow, yeah.
And it had caller ID. Back in the day,
sure,
we didn't
sure.
have caller ID on cell phones back then. So it was caller ID and call waiting and all those things that were included for free, no extra charge.
Right.
So I did a little bit of research. The problem was when I was working for Southwestern Bell, you could buy one of those phones at 12 places in Wichita.
Mm-hmm.
When Cricket opened, you could buy them at every Dillon's, every Quick Trip.
A lot more competition.
And there were 25 agents. So you immediately become relatively unimportant.
Right.
So I had a location that wasn't great. And it's kind of one of those things where if there's that many people, like if you were going to choose a McDonald's to go to
mm-hmm.
today, you'd probably just go to the closest McDonald's.
Right.
That's how it was. I was no longer a one or two or three or even five
mm-hmm.
in the pond. There's now hundreds of fish in the pond, and it just becomes too difficult to really differentiate yourself in that
right.
instance.
Yeah, I think it's like there's a, I don't know where the line is, but you go from competition is somewhat of a good thing because, you know, it's a good business to be in, to being too much competition. I think Peter Thiel touches on, like, in his book Zero to One, it's kind of like you kind of want to stay away from competition. You want to be so different that, to a point, it depends on the business, obviously, but, like, you want to be so different that there's really not competition. If people are going to you, you're not a commodity, you're like a unique thing, whatever that looks like.
No, that's really true. I mean, people ask me with the arcade, they ask, you know, when Dave and Buster's came to town, people said, oh my gosh, there's going to be another arcade in town. Does that worry you? And the answer was no. And it's because the arcade, you have to look at it differently. The arcade's not specifically video games. That's how people think of it. Mm-hmm. The arcade is family entertainment. Mm-hmm. So our competitors is the zoo, Tanganyika. It's also Dave and Buster's and right. All-Star Sports, but it's anything that the family can go do together
sure.
at a reasonable price and have a good time doing. Now, we happen to be an inside venue, so, you know, we do better in the winter than right. a Tanganyika or a zoo. But you have to make sure that you're looking at the picture correctly. And you're right about that because there, you know, if you look at this is something that I look at is a complete fail on my part. Something I look at as a complete fail on my part, and that's if you would have come to me in 2003 and said, I want to open a hamburger and ice cream place at 21st and Tyler in Wichita, Kansas, I would have said you were absolutely crazy out of your mind. There's, you know, Burger King and there's McDonald's and there's all these other places. Sure. And now there's 500 Freddy's steak burgers and custard, yeah. which is hamburger and ice cream, basically. I mean, it's, yeah. it is a differentiation, but it's because you don't have to be cheaper. You just have to be better.
Yep.
And if you offer something that other people don't have, they will pay for it if it's a good product.
Absolutely. So after the fail of the second cell phone store, what's the next business, or what fills in the gap then? What's next?
So at that point, I focused a little more on my education. I went to Friends University and got into their degree completion program,
mm-hmm.
Which is designed, if you have 60 credit hours, to fill in the additional 60 okay. credit hours to get you the degree.
Mm-hmm.
I completed that. I was still 11 credit hours short for 9 years.
Man, yeah. That's tough. Less than a semester, basically.
So
yeah.
Kids listening, don't do that. So it wound up being, just education-wise for just a second, it wound yeah. up being where when I decided I finally wanted to get this done at 36, I wanted to teach at the university level too. So I wrote to the dean at Friends, and I said, I'm 11 credit hours short. You have a master's program that starts in 12 weeks,
mm-hmm.
I want you to save me a spot in that, and I guarantee I'll get those 11 credit hours in 12 weeks. And there are ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you'll do it, I'll guarantee you a spot. I got the credits, did the master's program.
Awesome.
And taught at Friends for quite some time, and still teach at Wichita State occasionally as well.
Awesome.
But to answer your question, I got out of entrepreneurship for quite a while. I did, after the second cell phone store, I did open an eBay store.
Okay.
On the west side. So eDrop is still over on the east side, but I had one at 21st and Mays Road. It's now a liquor store, which probably would have been a better idea. but I had that for 2.5 years. And then I sold that business on eBay.
All right. Was that a franchised eBay store? Is that like your own spin on it?
I never do franchises.
Okay.
Franchises definitely have their place.
Yeah.
But I'm a little too much of a control freak
mm-hmm.
for franchises. When I see things that I think aren't working, I want to be able to change them.
Sure.
But the one thing that I learned from the cell phone store that failed to now is research. I do the amount of research I do,
mm-hmm.
And when I say research, when I opened my newest soda shops, I went to 7 states and 22 different locations of
wow.
other. Yeah. So I mean, the research is insane because if you, and this is one of the things that I always ask budding entrepreneurs is, who's your audience?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just like when I mentioned the arcade, the audience is not game players.
Right.
It's families, and now it's people who want to play pinball and have a beer. If you don't know who your audience is or you have it off, it can very much affect what you do and how you build out your business.
Sure, that makes sense. So for the research, you mentioned multiple states, a lot of locations for the Just a Sip or Papa's or whatever it was for. What else goes into your research there? So obviously it's traveling, but like how do you approach your research? Do you have like a checklist, or you just know like I just need to get a widespread, talk to the owners? What does that research look like?
You know, it depends. Some people will talk to you and some people won't.
Right.
Because, you know, some people absolutely view as competition, even though they're never going to set foot mm-hmm. in your state with their business. But I look at a lot of podcasts. Mm. There's a lot of people that will, you know, you can go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and you can type in the name of the owner, the founder.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they've done a podcast.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you all kinds of information. Now, 90% of the time or 95% of the time, if they've done 10 podcasts, 90% of that information is the same.
Very similar, yeah.
But you always get those nuggets. I was listening to
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday, actually, and I got just a little nugget. I was like, I really had no idea. And it's all those little things, because there's always going to be things you weren't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just, you know, it's a little bit of everything. It's listening to podcasts. It's looking at websites.
Yep.
You know, using, if they're online and they have an online presence, for example, a menu.
Yep.
Using the Wayback Machine.
I love the Wayback Machine.
So you can see what they've tried
mm-hmm.
by looking at their online menu and what's not there anymore. Because you may think, wow, I'm going to add this. They don't have that.
Right.
That's a great idea. And you find out they had it
yeah.
and they don't now. Why is that?
Sure.
It probably didn't work well. So it's a lot of different things that really go into, I think, making a successful business that unfortunately a lot of the time is not taught in business school.
Yeah. Well, it's like, if you spend, I mean, even if it's like a couple hours kind of diving in these podcasts and stuff, that few hours or even a day, whatever, could save you weeks or however much money it is to add something to your menu and then take it off and all that time. And yeah, you could save a lot of effort and time and money. Going back to school, was that something you felt you needed to do for the knowledge, or kind of just get the degree? And you went on to get your master's as well, but like, why did you go back? Because I know some people close to me, like they didn't get their degree till they were 50, and it was just something they felt that was always kind of looming that they needed to do. They were super successful before that otherwise, but they felt like they needed to check that box. How did you approach that?
Well, I was teaching at a local tech school. I've taught at all the levels pretty much. So a private tech school, public tech school, private four university, private four university online, public four year university. Mm-hmm. Taught at all of them. So I was at a local tech school, and I wanted to teach at a local college, and you have to have a master's to do that. And I also knew that I wasn't, you know, I was getting ready to move up. I was hired at LSI
mm-hmm.
Right after that, right before NetApp purchased them. And I knew that I had to have a degree to move up there.
Mm, okay.
I barely got hired because they pretty much wouldn't hire anybody if you didn't have a degree. So
sure.
Went ahead and did that and got my master's. And then about 5 years ago, I actually got my doctorate as well. Terrible ROI, but nobody calls me doctor either. So, but terrible ROI on that. But that allows me to focus more a little bit on master's classes when I teach those as well.
Sure.
But I think it's one of those things where there's a couple of different reasons to get it. But I was in corporate IT working for NetApp for almost 20 years.
Okay.
And you know, if you want to move up there, they very much look at your skill set, and
sure.
part of that is your education.
Sure, that makes sense. Something else that stood out, what you're saying, kind of doing the research and the podcast and stuff like that, is we send our Wichita Life Update email newsletter. And so there's like the bigger ones like Morning Brew and The Hustle, and those founders both have a ton of podcasts out there. So there's a lot of gems, but then there's just other podcasts of like general newsletter stuff. There's like a whole new little niche on the internet, but it's interesting. There's so much stuff you can gather just from kind of diving into these podcasts and spending a little time that saved me a ton of effort and time. So,
yeah. And that's really it is, you know, you have to look for, you have to be really good at learning how to search.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the way you do it is you don't type in the name of the company, you type in the name of the individual.
Yeah.
So they're on four or five different random podcasts that you've never even heard of,
mm-hmm.
That obviously have the worst technology ever that they've recorded on mm-hmm. too. But you can get some really good information. And the one yesterday was actually a little longer. It was like an hour and a half
yeah.
podcast. But there was some really good information in it about growth and you know,
right.
this company and their growth and mistakes they'd made along the way and things they wish they would have done differently. Mm-hmm. It was very, very interesting. And, and the guy asking questions asked a few financial questions as well. Mm-hmm. And the person answered them. And that was very interesting to me as well.
Yeah.
Because I was able to get insight into a couple of things that I didn't have before.
Right. Yeah, get a few specifics for sure. Okay, so fast forward to, I guess, the next business after the eBay stuff is the arcade.
It was the arcade.
2017? So talk a little bit about that. Yeah. What was the spur of that?
So the arcade was something that came about because I'm a child of the 80s. I love all things, you know, Pac-Man and Galaga and all that. I remember riding my bike down to the Grand Prix game room, which is gone the full life cycle. It's on West 13th. It went from a video game room to a country bar, and now it's a funeral home. So it's gone full cycle.
Literally full cycle.
It has. And in 2009, I was on eBay. Of course, I still am on there. And I saw a video game, a full-size arcade game. And I was like, I got to have this. So I bought it. And it was really cool. It was a Galaga machine. It was one of my favorite 80s games. And I thought, this is great. And I had it sitting there in the basement, and everybody loved it. And this is awesome. And I thought, you know, I need another one. So I got a Pac-Man machine. Mm-hmm. And then I had 48 of them.
That's impressive. Yeah. That's a big setup.
And it was a nice basement, too. So it wasn't just a concrete floor with a bunch of games down there. But so, you know, I learned to fix things and you know, change joysticks and replace plugs and a few other things. And every once in a while, I would have something I couldn't figure out. I met this guy online named Michael Jensen, who's my business partner in the arcade, and he can fix anything, literally anything. So I run the business side of everything. He fixes everything, and it's the perfect business marriage.
Yeah,
it really is. He has a crazy high attention to detail. But we decided one day, Michael and I didn't talk very often. He just worked on my machines and stuff. But I thought, if I'm going to do this, I have to have somebody who really is good at all that stuff.
Right.
And found this spot, ugly, terrible building down in Old Town, and I rented it the day before Thanksgiving. We literally opened December 15th.
Wow.
Yeah, no food, no alcohol. Yeah, yeah. It was 34 degrees. We opened at 6 o'clock. Capacity of the building, 124. We were at capacity in 26 minutes.
Wow.
There was a line outside for 3 hours.
That's incredible.
Never looked back.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It's one thing where I misjudged my audience. I thought it was going to be a bunch of old white guys.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, you get 20 something young ladies in there on the gun games, just blowing the smoke out of everything. You get a couple of guys in there in their 20s with their buddies and they're on NBA Jam or NFL Blitz.
Oh yeah.
It was surprising to me.
Yeah. So that was 2017. It kind of kicked off strong. Now you have a new location and stuff. How has kind of the reception been since then?
So after COVID, we were in the initial early stages of talking about different things and what made sense to do. And I just made the executive decision. I have friends that own arcades all over the U.S., Nashville, Phoenix, Denver, L.A. It's a relatively small group of people.
Sure.
And so you talk about different things, and there's some of these are just arcades like I am, and some of them are arcades with bars in them.
Yeah.
And you talk to all of them and what they're doing and how they're seeing things. And, you know, there's arcade bars in Kansas City.
Yeah.
They're in Oklahoma City. They're in Omaha. And we're, you know, right between.
Yep.
We're right in between some of the corporate bars. And so the decision was made, if we don't make a change and somebody else comes here, even though we had more games, we have 105 arcade games.
Yeah.
And 23 pinball machines. Most of your corporate bars have 60 machines total.
Yeah.
But if somebody here were to open up an Up-Down, for example.
Yep, I've been Up-Down in KC, yeah.
And have alcohol, we would have become irrelevant overnight.
Yeah.
Literally overnight.
Yeah.
Because people want to play Pac-Man and play pinball and all that. Mm-hmm. But if they can do it and have a beer, that's what they're going to go do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
absolutely what they're going to do. So we made the decision. We met the gentleman that owns the building. Was an ugly, ugly, terrible warehouse. No bathrooms, no heating and air, none of that. And it took almost 2 years to fully get everything done because of supply chain issues and all that. But yeah, we opened May 15th of last year, and it's been amazing.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I was just there a few weeks ago. We had a friend in from town, from out of town, and went and checked it out, and it's awesome. And even like some of the games, like random games that I probably wouldn't. I'm a kid of the '90s, so not the '80s. I was born in '92, but reading like Ready Player One, which I'm sure you're a big fan of. It's got all of the pop culture references. I think it's Joust. Is that what it's called? I saw you have that there, and I'm I Googled that when I was reading the book because I'm like, I don't know what this game is. And then I saw it there, and it's as difficult as they mentioned in the book, but there's a lot of fun games there.
Yeah, one of the great things about the model that we have, which is not tokens, it's, you know, there are tokens for the pinball machines, but all of the other games, it's $12 for adults, $10 for kids, 10 and under, and all the games are on free play.
Yep.
You know, it's half price every Tuesday, it's family night. But what it allows you to do is you can play those games that you might not normally play, because you're terrible at it.
Right.
So, but you try anyway because it doesn't cost me anything.
Right. You might not want to waste your tokens at a different barcade or a different arcade, but here you can just try it everything.
Exactly. Awesome, and that's what makes it really popular for a lot of people. Like for our parties and things like that, we do a lot more corporate parties now because they want to do it because we have alcohol and we have food.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
So, but kids' parties are super popular too. And part of that's because, you know, when mom or dad books that party, they know that they're not going to have to buy a card, and every kid's going to have a card. Yeah. They're going to have to reload it. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. And just to clarify, the food and stuff wasn't possible at the other location. Just would have been too expensive to set it up. Or what was the reason for not having it at the original one?
Two reasons: not enough space, and the other reason was the building was built in 1902. And had 12-inch thick concrete floors.
Okay, that'll do it. Yeah.
So to retrofit anything would have been extremely expensive.
Yeah.
There were power issues. We just barely had enough power to do what we needed to do.
Right.
So we just had to really kind of start over. And when we found this location, we were able to really, because it had limited everything, we were basically able to start from scratch. So we took the entire roof off, floor out, floor was re-poured concrete.
Yeah.
We were able to do a lot.
Yeah. It's incredible. If people haven't been, they need to check it out. It's really cool. What was next? What was the next business kind of after the arcade?
Well, the next business was my candy store, Sweet and Saucy, down in Delano, in the same building as the Monarch is, next to Milk Float. I wanted to do something different. One of the great things about working for NetApp is I traveled the world. So I got to, very luckily, have been to many different countries, but I was all over the U.S. pretty often. So I would always look for something that Wichita didn't have. You know, what can I do here? Wichita's kind of I call it a teenager-sized city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time, I used to say we don't have a Dave & Buster's, which we do now. Right. But we don't have an Apple store. We don't have a Cheesecake Factory. Yep. People used to look at me like, you don't have an Apple store? Every place has an Apple store. But it allowed me to help explain our size. You know, we're the largest city in Kansas, but we don't have an Apple store.
Yeah, that's a great point, yeah.
Yeah. So I would always look for things that I thought would be great here, but weren't here yet. So I was in Austin, Texas, and I came across this store called Tears of Joy, and it was a hot sauce store.
Okay.
So I'm back in my hotel room, and I'm doing research on hot sauce stores. Hot sauce sales are up 150% in the U.S. over the last 5 years.
Sure.
You know, it's real popular, but I just wasn't sure. It's like just a store that sells hot sauce, and thought about calling it like chips and salsa or something ridiculous like that. Next day I fly to Las Vegas for work, and I go into this amazing candy store, and I'm like, that's what I want to do. I want to do a candy store.
Yeah.
And I tell my girlfriend, and she's like, no, do the hot sauce store. I'm like, I want to do the candy store. And she goes, no, it's a bad idea. And then I said, actually, I'm going to do them both.
Yeah.
And she said, you're going to open two stores? I said, no. And opened one store, and she's the one that actually came up with the name Sweet and Saucy.
It's a great name, yeah.
And then the happy accident was when I was looking for I was looking for, you know, aprons, you know, men will wear aprons when they're cooking on the grill. Sure. Cause we sell, you know, 400 different hot sauces, barbecue sauces and salsas. We sell a lot of barbecue sauce. So, you know, I was looking for, you know, aprons that had funny sayings on them or looked really dumb.
Kiss or the chef like or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't find anything, but I found novelty socks and which I'm wearing some today, but you know, my mom used to always buy me novelty socks for everything, for Valentine's Day, for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, always. And I bought 20 pair of novelty socks, 20 different styles, and put them up on the wall, just see what would happen. Sold $120 worth of novelty socks the first day.
Wow.
Now we have over 1,500 different styles, over 15,000 pairs of socks are in there.
Wow, I didn't realize there was that many. I knew there was a lot. I didn't realize there was that many.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and that was a happy accident. That was never part of it. So it's sometimes it's recognizing when there, again, is something that you didn't realize was going to be there, recognizing what the audience is interested in and making that pivot. So Sweet and Saucy was next.
Okay. Very cool. And it's bigger than you think. Like from the street, you don't expect it to just kind of keep going back. It's a deep building. There's a, like, I mean, there's a lot of socks. So got all the hot sauce and the candy, but then there's a lot of socks back there.
And the socks are real popular because it's one of those things that you can get socks for everybody. We have socks that have police cars on them, and we have socks that have strippers on them.
Right.
And they're kid friendly, but I mean, as much as a stripper sock can be, but you know, we have them for everybody and people buy them because they're funny too.
Right.
So, you know, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, they fit in a stocking if it's Christmas time. If you're going to mail it, they don't weigh much. Yep. So
great gift,
people really, it's and they're inexpensive too.
Yeah. That makes complete sense. It's such a unique, like we were talking about earlier, like collective of you got the candy, you got the hot sauce, you got all the sodas you have and the socks. Like, yeah, what other place, I don't know, anywhere close, not even just Wichita, Kansas, anywhere close has that combination all in one spot?
And it is funny though too, because it didn't work out that way, but you know, mom will come in with the kids to buy something, and you know, they might grab hot sauce, you know, they're buying candy for the kids, they might buy hot sauce for dad because it's there, or dad will come in with the kids, and of course they always want candy, but you know, they might go back and buy socks, but he's going to see some hot sauce too. And we try to maintain a pretty good amount of hot sauce in stock. And it's amazing. And of course people buy it because, there's things you can't get at Dillon's or Walmart or even some of the specialty stores.
For sure. Exactly. And then I went in, I mean, it was a few months ago, but, and just asking the guy working, I'm like, what do you recommend? And then there's like, he has his recommendations. I think it was like Alice Cooper something hot sauce, which is really good. I had it last night. And then there's like the local stuff, which is cool that you have kind of a combination of like the nationwide, worldwide hot sauces plus the local stuff. So it's really cool.
Yeah. And you know, if you spend time with the customers, which we always try to, there's a blueberry ghost pepper hot sauce.
Interesting.
Okay. And I thought, okay, it's interesting. But we went ahead and ordered it.
Yeah.
So I have a woman that came in and she said, I love this. I put a couple of drops in my pancake batter in the morning, and it adds that blueberry flavor and a little bit of heat.
Interesting. Okay.
To my pancakes. Yeah. And I thought, I would have never thought of that.
Never would have crossed my mind.
So, you know, it's that listening to your customer and then also sharing that with other customers.
Right.
Because people love a story. So if you can give them a reason when they ask you, well, what do you like?
Sure.
Deviled eggs is also something that egg mix that you put a little bit of heat in.
Yeah.
A little bit of a serrano habanero.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah. That's great. Okay, so what's next? Papa's?
Is that next? Papa's was next.
Yeah.
So I'm still working at NetApp. I'm still flying all over the world, doing all kinds of stuff. And you know, so I see people all the time and they say, well, how do you do that when you're not there? Well, you have to build the business model so you can. I mean, if you're making $50,000 a year at your coffee shop or your ice cream store, you have almost less of a business and more of a job, and you just own the job.
Absolutely.
You know, and so you have to really look at, if I don't want to do this, how am I going to grow this? Do I want to do this for the rest of my life? I love all the things, all the businesses I have. I don't run them because I hire people that are better than me at running.
Right.
I know the overarching. But I hire people that know the bar business to run the arcade. Mm-hmm. We have people that work on the arcade games that know arcade games. You know, my background was IT, so that's what I focused on. So the ice cream store was a happy accident. I was looking at a spot in Clifton Square that had just, that had been empty for about 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to put a sock store in there because my socks were selling great. And I thought, well, you know, a little eclectic place in Clifton Square.
Perfect fit, yeah.
Messaged my real estate guy, and he messaged me back a little bit later and said it this was a Monday. He said at least Friday. So I lost out on that space. And then a little bit later, he called me back and goes, well, what about the spot in the middle? And I said, well, what about the spot in the middle? He says, it's going to be available if you want it. And I said, it's an ice cream store. And he said, yeah. I said, all right, let's do it. And my real estate guy's been with me since the beginning, too. Yeah. He quit thinking I was nuts after about four places.
Sure.
Because everything I do is a little weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, Papa's was next. And I signed the lease January 31st of 2020. Mm. And possession was 60 days later.
Okay.
So March 1st, I took possession. Mm-hmm. And the world was a very different place from when I signed the lease.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Wow. That's good timing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great timing. So there were a lot of people that I don't even think knew that we were different from the old owners in the beginning.
I know for a while, I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't realize it was different. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, everyone was at home for eight weeks or, you know, however long. And so people weren't really coming out. So, you know, business was very, very slow. You know, we had made a few changes, but, you know, it's changed significantly over time, and we're getting ready to do a partial rebrand, not fully, but a partial rebrand on it the next week or so. And it's just interesting, and it's great because, again, knowing your audience, lots of students from local schools walk over after school, lots of families, you know, College Hill's a big family area, lots of when it's warm, people walk, and that's why we had to add the deck on, that large deck there, because we need to give, you know, people more space.
It's a great space, yeah. I definitely can empathize and kind of feel with the school kids walking over. My parents owned the popcorn store over in Andover growing up and everything, but it was like right down the street from Andover Central or the middle school where I went to, and so it was like me and my friends in sixth grade, we went there, and I'm downing a couple 32-ounce ices after school every day. And yeah, it was, I mean, all the kids would come grab their little bag of popcorn or the happy hour ices. And yeah, it's definitely a hit when kids can walk to a place. That's it.
Oh, it really is. And it's, you know, it's, we're right down from the Catholic school that's there. I don't recall the name of it offhand, but you know, we have lots of young people that will come in, and others, Robinson's right around the corner too. And, you know, lots of people come in and enjoy it.
For sure.
And, you know, we've continued to change over time because, you know, when I first opened there, it was not doing what I wanted it to do. And COVID was part of that.
Yeah.
But I also think that we weren't differentiating ourselves.
Right.
I was just an ice cream store in Clifton Square. So we made quite a few changes.
Yeah.
And went from just ice cream. I got rid of everything that was upstairs. So the reason it's called Papa's General Store is because upstairs did have a bunch of crazy stuff that we sold, coffee mugs, and there was no seating at all upstairs. It was just stuff. And then I realized that nobody was really buying the stuff. So got rid of that, put a bunch of tables up there, which we certainly need in the summer now. And then about a year later, we brought Extreme Shakes. Mm-hmm. So these are the shakes that are literally a foot tall with ice cream and a full slice. One of them has a full giant brownie. One has a slice of cheesecake. One has a full piece of cake, multiple layer cake on it. And we sell those like crazy because we're the only ones that offer them. So it's giving the customer something they can't get anywhere else, and people absolutely love it.
And was that aspect of kind of doing your research and seeing what's hitting in other cities, other places that might have a similar like extreme ice cream?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it's okay, we're not doing it. And there's tons of Facebook groups for ice cream owners and for coffee shop owners.
Sure.
I thought we would be a coffee shop too.
You know,
again, I don't know who the person is that opened Coffee Days is.
Tiffany. Yeah.
So if Tiffany would have come to me and said, I'm going to open a coffee shop in Clifton Square or in College Hill with no drive-through, I would have said, you're crazy. You'll never make it.
Right.
You can't get in the dang place.
Yeah.
She knew
it's busy. You almost can't get a table.
Absolutely knew what she was doing. And I'm perfectly fine to admit I was wrong, which doesn't happen very often, but I'm perfectly fine to admit it, but she's kicking tail. I need to meet her someday. Mm-hmm. But so we changed, and what it was I was like, what are other ice cream owners doing? What are they doing to be successful?
Sure.
And I came across a Shark Tank that had a company in it, yeah, that was doing extreme shakes.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, that is exactly perfect, what yeah, we need to do. And people love them. People absolutely love them.
Sure. I think something that I love that seems to come up over and over again in your story is your willingness to pivot and see what else is working elsewhere. Because I think something that stands out to me about Wichita is that something will hit the coast, whether it's East Coast, West Coast, whatever that is, and it slowly makes its way to Wichita. But we have usually, I don't know, 6-12 month lag or something like that for whatever that is. And maybe it never comes here, but you're kind of looking elsewhere to see what could hit, and it does hit. Most of the time, that stuff will be successful here just for whatever reason. We're insulated from that being here in the Midwest or in the middle of the country. So it's interesting that you're willing to pivot, like for the Barcade or for the Extreme Shakes and so forth.
I think a lot of time it's, again, because of the size of Wichita. Like,
yeah,
if you're a franchise, you know, you're going to go to Tulsa first or in Oklahoma City first, even if it gets to that point. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to start in California. You're going to start in Florida.
Yeah.
So, you know, we it gets here, but it gets here slowly for a variety of different reasons. Mm-hmm. And I have to pivot because, you know, I think, if you know, staying stagnant is the death of pretty much any business. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at McDonald's, they're always doing anything from changing the menu so your extra value meal numbers changed, mm-hmm, which is clearly to get you to look at the menu and look at something different you might not have ordered before,
right,
to bringing back the McRib all the time, yep, which is the most interesting piece of meat ever, but it's always changing, and you have to be looking at what could I do better,
right?
You know, what is it that I can offer that, you know, you can go to Brahms or Dairy Queen and get ice cream, so I have to offer something you can't get there, right, and better customer service too.
Yep. Yep.
And once we do that, and you know, like we had a cereal bar for a while. So we had 30 different kinds of cereal you could come in. Mm-hmm. We served them in, you know, these little plastic Chinese food takeout containers, mm-hmm, the waterproof ones.
Yep.
And we would put any kind of milk in it you wanted, and you could go over and get whatever cereal you wanted. And that was at Papa's. And it did okay, but you also have to recognize there's a certain – when you have a wall, that's real estate.
Yep.
And it has to earn a certain amount of money. And if it's not, then you have to do something different. Yep. So it's gone now. And last week we brought in – we haven't really posted much about this in social media because we're getting ready to launch everything. But we brought in candy, and we have a ton of candy now. It's all in this one wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was the first weekend that we actually had it available, and it's sold pretty well.
Awesome. That's good to hear. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I don't know how much detail you want to go into that, but the last couple of businesses that I have listed, and there may be others, and I don't know what's next, but you have Let's Go Build with the Legos and then Just a Sip. So can you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, so the Lego store was, again, I was on a trip. This wasn't a business trip. I was with my girlfriend. We were in Phoenix, mm-hmm, and out there to see my daughter at the time. She doesn't live there. She's still my daughter. She doesn't live in Phoenix anymore. But we were out there and driving around, and I saw this store, and mm-hmm, the store had an interesting name. And I was like, well, that's odd. And I go, I wonder what that is. So we went in there. She said, well, turn the car around. Let's go. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So we turn the car around. We go in there, and it's a brick store. The Lego people are grumpy about a lot of things.
I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. IP lawyers. Mm-hmm. They're fun people. So went in this brick store, and I was like, I used to play with Legos when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was like, this is interesting. They have display cases, and there's mini figures in there that are $130.
Right.
And there's pre-built sets on shelves. And I looked around, and this is interesting. And they have a party room. There was a bunch of stuff stacked in it. Looked like they weren't really using it well. But I thought, this is interesting. And there's adults in here buying things.
Yeah.
So I was trying to find a location for Just a Sip at the time. We'll get back, yeah, to that, but I couldn't find one. So because you have to have a drive through,
right?
So I decided I'm gonna open up a Lego store, a Lego brick store, a brick store. I'm gonna open up one.
Sure.
So that's what I did. That was easy. I knew where the spot was that I wanted.
Yeah.
I knew it had to be on the east side.
Yep.
It's, you know, Legos are kind of a premium product. You have to, you know, they say, you know, what's the most important thing about when you open a place, and it absolutely is location, location, location.
Yep.
So I knew it needed to be on the east side, and I really thought it should be in that area. I looked at a couple of different areas, but I found that spot and, of course did my research, went to, 4 different states and about 15 stores.
Yeah.
Independent as well as franchise stores.
Sure.
And I do what I call cobbling. I take the best idea from here.
Oh yeah.
Another idea from here. Another idea from here. And then I put my own thoughts around it and my own goals around it. And that's what we do. You know, there's no point in reinventing the wheel if it doesn't need to be reinvented. I mean, when Freddy's launched, I mean, it's a burger, a drink, and fries. They didn't come up with that idea, but you do that because it works. Yep. That's what people want. So there's a lot of things that are similar. You do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something about Legos is interesting. I listened to a podcast called My First Million, and they did a whole episode on Legos and like these random websites that pop up that like are doing millions and millions of impressions a month. Like one of them is like Lego plans. Like you say, I have these 5 kits, and it'll tell you alternative stuff that somebody else has designed, and then you could buy a kit for $10. But it's something that hits for like adults and people with like the nostalgia angle, but then kids still love Legos. Like I've never used it.
Yeah, there's an app too that if you pointed at the Legos that you have on the floor, it'll tell you what you can build.
Wild. Yeah,
it is.
I wish they had that when I was growing up, because that's a very, very cool idea.
And the kits now come in multiple bags.
Yeah.
So you start with bag one and you build that. You remember when we got them, it was just a box full.
Good luck. Yeah.
You dig it up yourself.
That's so fun. So I love that. Again, it's kind of another aspect and another, again, piece of your childhood, which is it's building the bigger picture of kind of what you were into, video games, the arcade games, the Legos, the candy, and all that fun stuff. So.
And it was never, you know, it's funny. It was never, the goal was never let's open a bunch of fun places.
Right.
That was never the goal. It just kind of became that on accident. It's a happy accident, but it's great that that's, you know, where we're at.
Sure. And I don't know. I don't want you to take it the wrong way, but I've definitely called you the Willy Wonka of Wichita before with all the fun ideas. So, because it is awesome. Like, who else has this, like, a handful of, like, fun, individually fun, but then collectively, like, you can make a day out of just going to all your different places. So,
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, my dad said it's always – you always want to, you know, sell something that people want to do, not something that people have to do.
Sure.
You know, nobody wants to get their oil changed.
Yep.
But we'll cut that out. My dad always told me that, you know, one of the things you want to do is you want to sell something that people want to buy, not something they have to do. Yep. Nobody wants to, you know, get their oil changed, but they'll go get their nails done, or they'll go, you know, get their hair colored, or they'll, you know, go buy a new hat or a new gun, because that's the thing they want to do. So I kind of tried to always make what we do fun in some way so people can really have a good time and enjoy it.
Absolutely. Just a sip. Go into that a little bit.
Well, I was in Phoenix. I spent a lot of time in Phoenix prior to my daughter moving there, and I still go there because I like being warm, and I love it when it's hot. And so I'm down there in Phoenix, and I come across this store called Swig, and it's a soda shop. And so I started doing a little research on it, and because I couldn't figure out, you know, what it was. And I consume a very large amount of Diet Coke. And so I started doing a little research on it. I go, well, this is kind of weird. This is kind of interesting. And then I found out that, you know, they're from Utah, and that there's 6 different companies in Utah that just do this.
Wow.
Yes. And they all do it a little differently.
Sure.
They all do it a little differently, but there's 6. And there's actually 3 of them in Phoenix. Part of that's because both of those areas have relatively large Mormon populations, and Mormons typically don't drink caffeine.
Right.
And not hot drinks at all, except for a couple of minor ones, but it's not common. So that's kind of how it started.
It makes sense, yeah.
So I looked at, I said, you know, being in business, you think, well, how do you sell soda? And that's all.
Right.
I mean, cookies and pretzels. How do you sell soda and stay in business, pay rent? How do you do that? Well, you sell an awful lot of it is what you have to do. But that's what kind of got the ball rolling. I was like, this looks amazing. Because if you look at what you have to buy as a business owner, it's minimal. You don't really have to buy anything, hardly.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so we're just going to sell soda and pretzels and cookies and, okay, where's a drive-thru? Where can I sign up? Can't find one. It's July of 22. Mm-hmm. Cannot find one anywhere. I mean, right. There's not one anywhere.
Right.
So August of 22, I'm in Phoenix. I find a store. I decide I'm going to open a Lego store. Open that in October of 22.
Move quick.
Don't find a drive-thru until three of them pop up at the same time within 30 days.
Sure.
In August of 23.
Right.
One location told me no, they didn't believe this was a viable business. I said, okay. The other two said yes. Yeah. While my real estate guy is still looking at me like, you're still crazy. All these weird things you open up. And then we opened the West store at 13th and Tyler. We opened and we did free drinks for 2 days and served over almost 6,000 drinks.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, the line was about 50 minutes long at one point because it wrapped all the way from where our building is all the way around the bank and all the way out to Tyler Road.
Oh, boy.
It was crazy. It was over 100 awesome. Cars yeah. in line.
That's super cool.
It was crazy.
That's great. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but the kind of the rebrand, can you talk about that a little bit and what went into that decision?
Yeah, so, you know, we've always been Papa's General Store. And that name came from when we had an upstairs, and it was time at Papa's to make some changes. We've always just referred to it as Papa's, but we knew we needed to make some changes. And so we've done some additional painting inside. We added the candy.
Mm-hmm.
We're changing out some of the lighting to these really cute, our pendants, mm-hmm. Our pendants that hang from the ceiling are going to be upside down Christmas, ice cream cones.
Okay, nice.
Upside down ice cream cones. So they're just a little more fun and all that. It's also time for our awning to be replaced. It's 3 years old now.
Sure.
It's been through some terrible winters. So we decided to change the name from Papa's General Store to Papa's Ice Cream and Treats.
Okay.
Because it's what we are. It's really what we are at this point. And it was about that was about the same time that I was getting ready to sign a lease on a new spot at 37th and Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a brand new strip mall going in at 37th and Ridge in front of the Avante apartments that are being built there. And it's much bigger. You can't get as little space as you need for a soda shop very often.
Right.
They want to lease you a bigger spot because when you're gone, which will eventually happen at some point,
right.
They need to be able to lease it. Right. And if it's 800 square feet, they can't lease
it.
Not
a lot of businesses there.
So I decided I'm going to open up a combo store. I'm going to open up a Just a Sip, Papa's Ice Cream and Treats combo store, just like Jamba Juice and Auntie Anne's opened up at 29th and Mays. So when I decided to do that, I thought, well, why am I not doing this at our store at 29th or 21st and Webb?
Right.
So I am.
Nice.
So we will open a Papa's Ice Cream and Treats in there.
Yeah.
March 8th.
Very cool.
And so we will have, you know, three places in Wichita where you'll be able to get our amazing extreme shakes.
I love it.
And, you know, bring something to people that they haven't had on either side of town.
Sure. I love that. So you've been focused on kind of this rebrand for right now. That's going to be, I mean, that's going to be long past soon. So what's the next thing? I know you're always thinking of kind of the next thing. Do you have that in your head or do you just need to go travel some more until the next thing hits you?
So I am opening a whiskey bar in Clifton
That's
Square.
Right. Oh my gosh, I almost forgot about that. Yeah,
1868. People always want to know where that came from. That is the year Wichita was founded.
Okay,
not incorporated.
Right.
Founded.
Oh yeah, I've been through this deep dive before.
Yes. So it's a very unique place. You're not going to find anything like it in Wichita.
Yeah.
It's branded inside as Flight 1868.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, it's like you're in an airplane, like an airline lounge, a cross between an airplane and an airline lounge. We have real American Airlines first class seats in there to sit in, and it's going to be part of it is to take you back to the way it was in the heyday of flying on the upper deck of a 747 when they had a bar and a piano up there.
Yeah.
Which is not the way it is.
Right.
Hasn't been that way since the 1970s. I wasn't there, but
yeah.
We want to make it different too. So the drinks will all be amazing looking.
Yeah.
We have a glass that's oddly enough, a bird cage. We have a glass that's a pig. We have a glass that is a light bulb. And all of these will have tie-ins with places around the world. Mm-hmm. So everything is tied in with, you know, Wichita being the air capital,
sure,
being founded in 1868. And then everything that we do in there is tied around aviation.
Okay.
So if you have the pig is from a luau in Hawaii. If you have the light bulb, you know, it has to do with California and being where, you know, one of the idea capitals of the world.
Yeah.
And we want it to be so it's fun. So you want to come in with your friends. You want to take pictures.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, Instagram it, Facebook it, TikTok it, all that kind of stuff. And, of course, delicious drinks. But we'll have very nice whiskeys, wines, and cocktails.
I love it. And when is that opening?
In March.
In March. Okay.
Yes.
So very quickly. Okay. And what's roughly how many people can that hold?
It's pretty small inside. It'll only hold about 20.
Okay.
Because we want it to be, we don't want it to be crowded.
Yep.
And definitely. Then of course our patio will open as soon as it gets warm too. So
perfect.
We'll have nice patio outside and you'll be able to smoke cigars outside too if you like.
Very cool. I'm very excited to check that out. So, okay. So I'm going to skip a couple questions because I would, those other ones were a lot more interesting than what I had down, but I have some questions about Wichita specifically.
Sure.
I want to ask you. So what is your favorite part of Wichita, or what's a hidden gem in Wichita?
You know, I have to say I lived in College Hill for a while. About 8 years I lived down there in a duplex before I bought my first house. I just love College Hill. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in the summer, the trees, you can walk down to the park. If you've got kids, you can push them in a stroller, which is what I did with my oldest. It's just a wonderful little community. You know, the lights at Christmas and all that kind of stuff. I do love that. I do love that. You know, there's so many hidden gems. I've turned into that old guy. I drive around a lot and look at stuff, especially in the summer. I have an old beater, 20-year-old convertible that I'll drive around. But I think there's so many old neighborhoods that are, you know, where everybody just takes care of everything and takes care of themselves and each other.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not always about the big expensive houses. It's about, you know, the communities that people have built. And
absolutely,
there's obviously that in College Hill, but there's other places that are around the city that are like that as well.
I agree with that. I think something cool about all your businesses too is that you've hit a lot of these like iconic or just interesting spots. You have the East Side, West Side, you've got Clifton Square, you've got kind of the new up and coming, what is it? Greenwich Place, whatever they call the
Greenwich Place.
Greenwich Place. Delano, like downtown with the arcade. It's kind of cool how you kind of touched on most of those kind of iconic areas or neighborhoods of Wichita. It's really cool, a widespread.
Yeah, it's all about tying in, and you know, we're really excited with what's happening in Delano too. You know, with the new transit center down there, and you know, with the continuing changes with the around the Winsturg Stadium, Riverfront Stadium. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be exciting down there too. So we're really looking forward to that. That's why we love Wichita. We really were big believers in it.
Absolutely. Is there anything you wish Wichita had that it doesn't, or what would you improve about Wichita?
Two things.
Okay.
Rooftop restaurant. I cannot believe that whoever built the Vora building did not put that restaurant on the roof.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sit outside, nobody, and look at a parking lot or a street. There are so many. We have so many restaurants. We have some great restaurants like Chester's and Yaya's has done amazing with their patio, given that it looks like a parking lot. But, you know, we have Newport. We have Chester's. Those are nice. But, you know, rooftop bar would be great. And I literally cannot believe there's not a restaurant downtown that doesn't overlook the river.
Yep. I've been saying that forever. Yeah, I agree.
And knowing the people in Wichita, I mean, we do love our Texas Roadhouse. And the main reason we love our Texas Roadhouse is for the rolls. But Wichita's, if you look at the store numbers across the nation, our Texas Roadhouses are always in the top 10. If they open a Texas Roadhouse downtown overlooking the river, guaranteed success.
People's heads would explode.
They literally would. But if we had a nice restaurant overlooking the river, I'm surprised.
I don't know how it doesn't exist.
The restaurant in the Hyatt is in the middle.
Yep.
It doesn't overlook. I think those are two things that we are really missing, and I think it would drive additional investment by others. I'm just really surprised that it hasn't been done. And maybe we'll see that a little bit with the development around Riverfront Stadium,
right.
But it'll be interesting to see. But I think that would be I think it would be very successful, especially if it's on the East Bank.
Yeah.
Because then you would have a view of the ballpark. You would also have view of the sunsets. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I agree. I've been saying that forever. That's my guess. That's always in the back of my head when I ask that question. Last question. What does Wichita mean to you?
Wichita's home. You know, I think there's a lot of young people, and I was certainly that one of them. You know, when I was in high school, there was no internet, really. You know, we had dial-up, but that's about it. But, you know, I wanted to go to Kansas City or Dallas. You know, that's where you want to move. You want to go to K-State or KU a lot of times just because it's not Wichita. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to call WSU Hillside High. You know, we didn't want to go there. We wanted to move because this is just Wichita. But I think, you know, as I traveled a lot and got to go places, what I really realized is, you know, I have friends and they're like, you could live anywhere. You don't have to live in Wichita because you travel for work. You know, we had an office here. NetApp still has an office here, but my boss was in California. I had employees, but my closest employee lived in Austin. So I didn't have to be here. Right. And I said, Wichita's great. I said, it's hot in the summer. It's cold in the winter. We have tornadoes. There's no lakes. There's no beaches. There's no mountains. I said, but you know, you can get a $250,000 house, you know, with five bedrooms and granite countertops and all that. Mm-hmm. And they would look at me and you know, they live in California, and they'd be like, that's crazy. And I said, yeah. And you live 5 miles from the beach. And I said, how often do you go? And they're like 4 or 5 times a year.
Right.
You know, so it's one of those things where you learn that, you know, people here are kind. If you give it to them, they'll give it back, you know, kindness or the other way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where we do have a lot, but we're also very lucky in that if we can, you know, live within our means and we can travel the world very easily. I always tell people, you know, there's so much to do. I started from absolutely zero. But you know what? You can fly to Las Vegas for almost nothing on Allegiant.
Right.
You know, take a small bag. There are inexpensive hotels. There's so much free stuff to do there. You don't have to spend any money. There's right. So much free stuff to do. I think Wichita is a good launching pad because you don't have all that regulation. Wichita does not have a city business license. If you just want to start a business, you don't have to have a license. Now, if you're going to charge sales tax, you have to, you know.
Sure.
But the barrier to entry is so low. So for entrepreneurs, there's so much that you can do. And I see Wichita as an amazing place to be able to start that business and grow it to wherever you want to go.
I love it. Derek, thank you. Where can people find you? More about your businesses? Where would you send people?
You know, there's all kinds of different places you can go. You can go to our main website, which is scioncapitalpartners.com. That's SCION, scioncapitalpartners.com. You can also go to any of our Facebook pages. All of our stores have Facebook pages and websites as well. Or just swing down to the arcade. You might see me in there playing Pac-Man.
Perfect. Well, I will be sure to link everything up. I'm very excited to try 1868. Not 1870, 1868. And we'll have to grab a drink sometime. Appreciate it. Thanks, Derek.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Wichita Life Podcast. Check us out on social media at Wichita Life ICT or our website, wichitalifeict.com. Huge thanks to Jake B. for editing and producing our podcast. Have a good one, and we'll see you next time.